This is the Does God Exist Bi-Monthly Journal for the Visually Impaired for September-October 2016. John Clayton is your reader. The cover of our bi-monthly for this particular go-around has a picture with a whole bunch of people in different races and ethnic groups and so forth. And the lead article is titled, What Makes Humans Special? A major issue that is poorly understood in America today is the question of whether humans have any more value or worth than any other living thing. If all of life is viewed as a product of naturalistic evolutionary process, and if survival of the fittest is what separates humans from all other life on Earth, then if some form of life comes along that is more fit, humanity will become extinct. This scenario is the starting point for many science fiction stories. We have seen the acceptance of naturalism and evolutionary origins of all living things in the claims of animal rights groups. Several years ago, President Obama was taken to task by PETA, which is People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, for swatting a fly. We have also seen multiple lawsuits on behalf of a variety of animals concerning property rights and abuse. We've had articles about that in our March-April 2013 issue, in July-August of 2014, and in March-April of 2015. The scientific community is heavily divided on this issue because much of the research in psychology, medicine, and the development of drugs of all kinds is usually done on animals. Rats and mice are used extensively, but sometimes even monkeys are used to test a drug or procedure. There was a time, not too many years ago, when a pregnancy test involved the probable death of a rabbit. The biblical point of view on this subject is very clear. In Genesis 1:26, the first couple are told to be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the fowl of the air, and over everything that moves on the earth. End of quote. In Genesis 2:15, we are told, quote, God took the man and put him into the garden to dress it and to keep it. It is clear that man was the caretaker of the garden and was responsible for managing it. God made the first clothing for humans out of skins, Genesis 3:21, suggesting human superiority to other living things. However, the major difference in humans biblically is that the man and woman were created, quote, in the image of God. End of quote, Genesis 1:27. The Hebrew word for fashioning the man's body is a word yatur in the Hebrew, and it's used in Genesis 2:7. This word is normally used in reference to something a potter would do, forming a statue or a piece of pottery. There is nothing special about the human body, as we are made of the dust of the earth, and it is to that dust that we shall return, Genesis 3 and verse 19. What is different is the spiritual makeup, as humans are described as being in the image of God. Genesis 1:27 says, quote, So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he them, male and female created he them. The Hebrew word bara, B-A-R-A, is used in this passage and translated create. This word is used only in reference to what God can do, never in reference to what humans can do. It is interesting that the humans are more than just a singular being, just as God is. The word for God used in Genesis 1 is Elohim in the Hebrew, which is a plural word. In Genesis 1:26, when God describes the human's total makeup, a plural reference is given. Let us make man in our image. Here the reference is to the other parts of the Godhead, and the fashioning is to be made, asa, a plural being. Just as Elohim refers to the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, humans too are made of more than one part. We have body, spirit, and soul. How do we know this picture is true? What evidence do we have to back it up? We do need to emphasize that humans are told to take care of the creation and not to abuse it. Part of taking care of the garden means not polluting it, not damaging it, but rather being a good manager of it. It does not mean abusing the animals that live on this planet, and the Bible does not condone making animals suffer. It is based on the realization that animals are to be managed and cared for by humans. And throughout the Bible, we are told to use animals for our well-being and even as a sacrifice to God. What is not special? Many times we see statements about animals that fail to realize how special animals are. Animals think, and they can be very intelligent. The problem with making reference to animal intelligence is that it is difficult to measure, and that is true of human intelligence as well. As the father of a mentally challenged son, I can tell you that measuring intelligence in humans is very difficult. My son as a child would score over 100 on the Otis IQ test. On the Stanford-Binet IQ test, he would score less than a 50. That's a huge difference. But it is because of what the tests are measuring. The Otis test was highly verbal, and my wife and I read to our son as a child. His verbal skills to this day are quite good. That doesn't mean that understanding always goes with the verbal skills. One of our favorite family stories involves a disciplinary situation where my son, in anger, stopped out of the room yelling, quote, "You're causing me to commit adultery!" End of quote. He knew adultery was a bad thing, and that it was something you commit, but he had no idea what was involved in an adulterous act. The Stanford-Binet was not as verbal, and was probably a more realistic evaluation of his mental ability. There are all kinds of intelligence, and what is true of animals as well. We also need to point out that the size of the brain has nothing to do with intelligence. Some of the world's geniuses, like the famous Japanese scientist Yukawa, had brain sizes well under 1,000 cc's, and animals such as whales have larger brains than do humans. Animals can think and reason. If a banana is suspended from a ceiling completely out of the reach of a chimpanzee, but if there is furniture in the room, the chimp will stack the furniture until it can reach the banana. Those of us in the Midwest who feed birds can tell you that raccoons can think of incredible ways to get the bird seed, even when it is stored in a supposed break-in-proof container. Many times, writers suggest that animals cannot talk, but it is important to understand that the word talk is far too restrictive to be useful. Parrots talk, but that talk is mimicking rather than conveying information. Most animals have ways of communicating. Birds singing are often sending a message to other birds about territory or reproduction or food. What animals do not have is language. They do communicate, but they don't have language. Language is defined as, quote, the ability to acquire and use complex systems of communication, end of quote. That involves more than just identifying territory or making sexual or material contact. The textbook discussion of language says, quote, language has the properties of productivity, recursivity, and displacement, and relies entirely on social convention and learning, end of quote. Animals do not have to be taught their communication skills. Those skills are instinctive and are present in animals even when they are not in social contact with other members of their kind. A similar discussion is involved in the word love. The reason the Greek language has five words for love is that there are so many different kinds of love. Parent-child love is different from brotherly love, which is different than sexual love. The biblical concept of love, seen in the Greek word agape, expresses a form of love that doesn't seem to take place in animals. The whole subject of emotions is very complex, but everyone who has had a dog for a long time has seen what appears to be joy and perhaps anger. We tend to ascribe human characteristics to animal behavior. A built-in survival skill that is instinctive may not be emotional. But whatever their control and origins may be, animals do seem to express emotions. Suggesting that animals do not control their environment as a means of identifying animal characteristics is also prone to misunderstanding. Certainly, beavers control their environment, and many animals choose certain environments and shape them to maximize their survival and the survival of their young. Examples are fish who scoop out bowls to lay their eggs, prairie dogs that dig underground homes, and birds that hollow out trees for nests. These things seem to be instinctively driven in most cases, and it is the role of instincts that may be more of an issue than the actual product of what that instinct might produce. What is special about humans? What sets humans apart from other animals and makes humans special is their spiritual makeup. We are in the spiritual image of God. God is a spirit, John 4:24, and we are in his image. That is what allows us to do things that have a spiritual base. We worship God, quote, in spirit and in truth, end of quote, because we have a soul that was created in the image of God. Animals do not worship, no matter how advanced they appear to be. If worship were naturally acquired as a product of evolutionary processes, then one would expect to see worship carried on in some way in higher forms of life. Electroencephalograms show certain brain responses in humans during worship, activities such as praying, singing, and there is no such pattern seen in any way in other living things. This led some researchers in psychology to suggest that there is a section of the brain that only humans possess that causes worship. That would mean that such an area should be functional in some way in other life forms, and that is simply not the case. Similar evidence is involved in human creativity. There have been elaborate attempts to show that animals create art or express themselves in art and music. The problem is that it is very difficult to avoid anthropomorphic influences by those doing the research. Coco, a gorilla who has mastered the sign language of the deaf, released a music album of, quote, Coco favorites, end of quote. The album was constructed by researchers playing a song for Coco and then asking for a thumbs up or a thumbs down by the gorilla as to whether the song should be included in the album. The problems with such a project should be obvious. The music played is from a certain culture using a certain set of musical instruments in a particular structure of music. The diatonic scale, the chromatic scale, etc. are choices humans make. More to the point is that this is a human enterprise. Coco is being led to make choices of human types of music. Researchers have pointed out that this is an operant conditioning using a form of the modified American Sign Language, which her trainer, Francine Patterson, describes as gorilla sign language. Coco did not spontaneously express herself by creating an expression of feelings, emotions, or wonderment. She has been rewarded with food for making a response the researchers wanted. In addition to creativity, humans are capable of a very special kind of love. It is incorrect to say that animals don't experience love, but the word love has multiple meanings and applications. The Greek language, the language of the New Testament, has many different forms for love, each having different meaning. Biologists and psychologists have researched love on a chemical basis. We know that lust releases testosterone and estrogen, and that strong feelings can exist for significant periods of time, even months. The brain releases neurotransmitter hormones, dopamine and serotonin, and these all play a role in physical expressions of love. In animals, this is instinctively driven and results in the propagation of the species. Also instinctively driven is the care of a mother for her offspring. What is unique about humans is that a selfless kind of love can exist that is not physical. The Greek word agape, which is repeatedly used throughout the New Testament, describes and emphasizes this kind of love. God is love, 1 John 4:16, and love your enemies, Matthew 5:44, are two examples. One dictionary defines agape love as the love of the soul. You may not love your enemy as a brother, philia in Greek, but you can love his soul as a human and want what is best for him or her. The classic emphasis on the various forms of love is demonstrated in John 21:15 through 17 when Jesus keeps calling Peter to an agape type of love and Peter keeps responding with a filial type of love that is not unique to humans. A final aspect of what makes humans special is that humans have a concept of self. The notion of self has been a subject of debate among philosophers, psychologists, and theologians for many centuries. There is no physical way to discuss the notion of self because it has to do with the individual's relationship to culture and the events that are part of the world around us. A part of this is our capacity to be concerned about our own mortality and what the future is beyond death. Self brings in many other concepts we have discussed in this essay. The agape form of love can be expressed for a country. The willingness to die for a belief is unique to humans. The whole notion of sin is a product of self, and animals do not demonstrate any concept of right and wrong or good or evil. Atheists, like Richard Dawkins, want to deny that good and evil even exist. See River Out of Eden, his book, page 133. The notion of self involves a belief in evil, in sin, and in life after this life. It allows humans to feel guilt, to forgive, and to be sympathetic. Animals do not demonstrate these characteristics, and animal behavior can always be explained in terms of instinct and what promotes their own survival. A dog that dies defending his owner is not expressing patriotism or self-sacrificing agape type of love, but is protecting his own source of food and shelter. This instinctive drive may cause an animal to do something that is irrational, but survival and propagation of the species are at the bottom of the action. That is different from humans offering themselves for the survival of another human or a political idea. We are all familiar with situations where a wild animal was kept as a pet for years and suddenly turned on and killed its owner. No attempt to turn a pet into a human will work because no animal is created in the image of God. Humans are special, and the tendency of our world today to destroy human life for animalistic reasons is leading us toward global disaster. As a Christian, I have to believe that no matter who you are or what you believe, you have value as a special creation of God, created in His image. Survival of the fittest, the American way. Here's a quote of Ray Kroc, who was the founder of McDonald's hamburgers. "If one of my competitors were drowning, I'd stick a hose in their mouth and turn on the water. This is a rat-eat-rat, dog-eat-dog. I'm going to kill him before they can kill me." You're talking about the American way of survival of the fittest, unquote. Evolutionary beliefs come in many forms and are stated in many ways. But certainly one of the most commonly accepted beliefs that has grown out of evolutionary teaching is the belief stated above. This belief has been used to justify slavery, dictatorships, war, economic control, political campaigns, and is now seen in children's video games. One could argue whether or not that is the American way, but there is no question about its prevalence and how often it is used to justify some human behavior. My favorite story of survival of the fittest is an experience I had while participating in a National Science Foundation Institute program designed to teach teachers how to teach students an approach to learning called the investigative approach. The idea was that instead of lecturing students about something, you would have a laboratory experiment or demonstration that the students could do, which would show them the principle you were trying to teach. We were at a museum in Chicago in a section designed to show us how to teach students the way natural selection works. A very hungry northern pike was going to be put into a large aquarium that had a bunch of small fish in it. All of the fish were the same size, but some of them were the same color as the sand and reef rock in the aquarium. Some were of radically different color than the sand and the reef rock, and others had some of the reef coloring, but none of the sand coloring. One of the fish was injured and had different coloring than any of the others. The fish stood out because it was so different from all the other fish and swam in an odd, jerky way because of the injury. We were asked to predict which fish would be eaten first and which would be eaten last. The big pike was carefully admitted to the aquarium and the small fish scattered. The injured fish seemed oblivious to the presence of the pike. We suspected that it was because he was missing one eye and seemed to be unable to see at all as he kept running into things. All of us expected the injured blind fish to be easy prey and thus eaten first by the big pike. We predicted that the fish that were hard to see and hit against the reef rock and sand would be eaten last. The big pike scooted past the injured blind fish and attacked three fish that were hard to see. The aquarium became a cloud of sand and fleeing fish as the pike charged about, grabbing one fish after another. Very quickly, the fish that were hard to see were eaten, and then the radically different colored fish. The injured blind fish was never eaten and swam aimlessly about the aquarium, occasionally bumping into the pike. There were some 30 of us teachers watching this, and explanations began to fly as to why this happened. Maybe the pike sensed a disease in the injured fish. Maybe the injuries affected the taste of the injured fish. I finally said, "Maybe the survival of the fittest doesn't always work." And after a good laugh, the group moved on to the next project. The fact is that in nature, the fit do not always survive. and the less fit don't always die out. What is most significant about this discussion is the incompatibility that survival of the fittest has with the teachings of Jesus Christ. Humanity has many severe issues confronting it that bring about the teachings of Christ and the thoughts of Ray Kroc in direct conflict with each other. What is humanity to do with people who seem to be so severely mentally ill or so mentally challenged that they have to be cared for by society for their entire life? Do we continue to extend the life expectancy of humans by creating artificial organs that replace the heart, kidney, pancreas, liver, and so forth of dying patients and allow them to live much longer? Some activists suggest another answer to that should be a resounding no, and would, in fact, euthanize non-productive humans, emptying nursing homes, mental hospitals, and prisons, and care facilities, and saving the cost of caring for those individuals. The biblical perspective on this subject is in opposition to this view. The Bible portrays all human beings as special. We are all created in the image of God, no matter what our physical, emotional, or spiritual condition might be. In Bible story after Bible story, the weak defeat the strong with God's help. The weak nation of Israel defeats the strong nation of Egypt. Teeny David defeats mighty Goliath. Gideon with 300 men defeats a Philistine army of 120,000 in Judges 7 and 8. Jesus Christ comes from an insignificant town and from a family with a dubious history. There were 3 harlots in direct ancestry to Christ. And successfully opposes the religious hierarchy and ministers to the poor and the downtrodden. The early church fed and clothed the less fit in Acts 2:42-47 and was commanded to comfort the feeble-minded in 1 Thessalonians 5:14. Another contrast between the proponents of survival of the fittest and the principles of Christianity is the segregation of humans based on fitness. The history of humanity is full of cases where one population denigrated a group of people who were different from them on the assumption that the denigrated group was inferior to them. America has a bad track record on human rights because of this. Black people were denied the right to vote for many years because they were deemed unfit. The history of women's rights everywhere on the planet has been a tragic history of men deeming women less fit and denying them equal status, equal education, and equal pay. The biblical record goes to great lengths to point out that Jesus viewed all people to be of equal value. The writings of the apostles made it clear that there is neither Jew nor Greek, there is neither slave nor free, there is neither male nor female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus, Galatians 3:28. One of the most interesting accounts of Jesus' life is in John 4. Jesus was passing through the land of Samaria. Most Jews made it a habit to detour around Samaria, if they could. Under no circumstances would they talk to a Samaritan or have any relationship with them. Not only did Jesus talk with a Samaritan, but the Samaritan was a woman. In that culture, women were considered to be less fit and usually walked behind a man and had no public conversation with him. The disciples of Christ are shocked at what Jesus was doing, verse 12. And at the end of the chapter, Jesus and the Samaritan woman talk about where people will worship God in the future. And Jesus says, "But the time is coming and is now here, when the true worshipers will worship God the Father in spirit and truth." So is survival of the fittest the American way? As our country drifts away from the teachings of Christ, and we become more concerned with things and competition than we are with the quality of life for all people, the answer appears to be that Kroc is right. Christians need to bring Christ to a lost and dying world. If the world doesn't die to sin, as Romans 6 tells us, we will see more Americans being led to the works of the flesh, which are obvious. Sexual immorality, impurity, depravity, idolatry, sorcery, hostility, strife, jealousy, outburst of anger, dissensions, factions, envy, murder, drunkenness, carousing. That's Galatians 5, verses 19 through 21. Not only is survival of the fittest not a sole agent in the development of living things, but it will destroy us if we adopt it as our way of dealing with each other. The passage in Galatians goes on to describe those who belong to Christ as having a different way of living. One we want to urge our fellow human beings to embrace. This way of living involves the fruit of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, patience, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Against such things, there is no law. Galatians 5, verses 22 through 23. What should you do when doubts arise? By Joel Stephen Williams. From time to time, good-hearted, honest, sincere, humble believers have questions that are not easily answered. Maybe it is the inequities of life or the oppressive weight of seemingly endless progression of burdens, illnesses, death of loved ones, financial losses, or the severing of relationships that threaten to overwhelm one's ability to cope and endure. Through times of struggle like these, a devoted Christian may experience what feels like the absence or silence of God, wondering if God hears one's prayers. Doubt may begin to arise in so many different forms. What should you do when doubts arise? The wisdom of Ecclesiastes in the Old Testament records the philosophy of the teacher who had observed how unfair life could be in his day. He explains, quote, "So I turned and gave my heart up to despair concerning the toil of my labors under the sun, because sometimes one who has toiled with wisdom and knowledge and skills must leave all to be enjoyed by another who did not toil for it. This also is vanity and great evil." End of quote, Ecclesiastes 2:20-21 and 6:1-2. Quote, "The race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, nor bread to the wise, nor riches to the intelligent, nor favor to the skillful, but time and chance happen to them all. For no one can anticipate the time of disaster. Like fish taken in a cruel net, and like birds caught in a snare, so mortals are snared at a time of calamity when it suddenly falls upon them." Ecclesiastes 9:11-12. Fate seems to be against the righteous person, or at best it was merely, quote, "the same fate for all. To the righteous and the wicked, to the good and the evil, to the clean and the unclean, to those who sacrifice and those who do not sacrifice." Ecclesiastes 9, verses 2 through 3. At times the wicked seem to have free rein to do evil, while the pure in heart have no guardian or protector. The teacher observed that, quote, "In the place of justice, wickedness was there, and in the place of righteousness, wickedness was there as well." Ecclesiastes 3:16. He saw all the oppressions that are practiced under the sun. Look, the tears of the oppressed, with no one to comfort them. On the side of their oppressors there was power. Ecclesiastes 4:1. There are righteous people who perish in their righteousness, and there are wicked people who prolong their life in their evil doing. Ecclesiastes 7:15. There are righteous people who are treated according to the conduct of the wicked, and there are wicked people who are treated according to the conduct of the righteous. End of quote. Ecclesiastes 8:14. The teacher struggled to understand these inequities of life. He believed that humans were more than mere animals because God had, quote, "put a sense of past and future into their minds, that they cannot find out what God has done from the beginning to the end," end of quote, Ecclesiastes 3:11. Unaided human wisdom was insufficient by itself to make complete sense of life or to discern what effect the government of God had on the affairs of humans. No one can find out what is happening under the sun, however much they may toil in seeking. They will not find it out, even though those who are wise claim to know. They cannot find it out. Ecclesiastes 8:17, 10:14, and 11:5. Faced with all the vanity of life, the teacher asked questions that sounded a somber tone of doubt. Who knows whether the human spirit goes upward and the spirit of animals goes downward to the earth? End of quote, Ecclesiastes 3:21. In spite of all the teacher's pessimism, though, there is a marvelous gem, a defiant, firm statement of faith and trust, embedded in the middle of this negative-sounding philosophy. Though sinners do evil 100 times and prolong their lives, yet I know that it will be well with those who fear God, because they stand in fear before Him, But it will not be well with the wicked, neither will they prolong their days like a shadow, because they do not stand in fear before God. End of quote. Ecclesiastes 8, 12 and 13. The evidence was not clear. It was mixed and confusing. Good arguments could be made by intelligent people for both viewpoints, for living a righteous life or for living selfishly without any thought for God. Nevertheless, the teacher knew that living a righteous life before God was a better choice, even if difficult questions tormented him at every turn. The discussion was over. All of the evidence had been heard and weighed from the teacher's philosophy, Ecclesiastes 12:13. What was the conclusion? What should people do when they had doubts? The answer was clear and simple, quote, "Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of everyone," end of quote, Ecclesiastes 12:13. Why was this the answer not only then, but also now? There are some things a good-hearted person who wants to know the truth can perceive to be right and true, even though complex questions plague one's mind and remain unanswered. We can know that it is right to fear or worship God. Prayer and worship are right. We will never feel bad about doing these duties. Obedience to God is right. And what is the number one duty of obedience? Quote, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the greatest and first commandment. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself." Matthew 22:37-39. We know that it is right to love God by loving other people. So what should we do when doubts arise? We should love and worship God and obey him and love our neighbor in the plain duties that we know must be right and pure and true. A British minister, F.W. Robertson, in 1816-1853, had a very similar thought along these lines. He preached a sermon on March 2, 1851, on the text, quote, "If any man will do his will, he shall know of the doctrine, whether it be of God or whether I speak of myself." John 7:17. From this biblical text, Robertson argued that any person can attain the truth and know it by means of obedience. If we will, in other words, desire, to know the truth and commit ourselves to doing it, we will, through experience, know that God's will through Christ for us is genuine. Robertson was aware that people in his day often encountered doubts. Quote, "They go to church because it is the custom, and all Christians believe that it is the established religion. But there are hours, and they come to us all in some period of life or another, when the hand of mystery seems to lie heavy on the soul, when some life shock scatters existence, leaves it a blank, and dreary waste henceforth forever. And there appears to be nothing of hope in all the expanse which stretches out, except that merciful gate of death, which opens the end hours when a sense of misplaced or ill-requited affection, the feeling of personal worthlessness, the uncertainty and meanness of all human aims, and the doubt of all human goodness, unfix the soul from its old moorings and leave it drifting, drifting over the vast, infinite, and awful sense of solidarities." End of quote. That's from Obedience, the Organ of Spiritual Knowledge. Who in this situation was most likely to doubt? Robertson continued, quote, "Then the man whose faith rested on outward authority and not on inward life will find it give way. The authority of the priest, the authority of the church, or merely the authority of a document, proved by miracles and backed by prophecy in the soul-conscious life hereafter, God, will be an awful, desolate, perhaps. Well, in such moments you doubt all, whether Christianity be true, whether Christ was man or God or a beautiful fable. You ask bitterly, like Pontius Pilate, what is true? And in such an hour, what remains? When all of your usual supports seem to fail you and doubt remains, what should you do?" Robertson's reply is identical to the book of Ecclesiastes. Quote, "I reply, obedience. Leave those thoughts for the present. Act. Be merciful and gentle, honest. Force yourself to abound in little services. Try to do good to others. Be true to the duty that you know. that must be right, whatever else is uncertain. And by all the laws of the human heart, by the word of God, you shall not be left to doubt. Do that much of the will of God which is plain to you, and you shall know of the doctrine whether it be of God. Again, what should you do when doubts arise? If your usual pillars of support on which you have relied in the past are failing you, and if you are unable to deal with the questions in your normal way, pause from the mental labor of attempting to solve uncertainties that have plagued great minds for millennia. Focus on what you know must be right. Care for the widows and orphans. Visit the sick and those who are grieving. Feed the hungry. Teach a Bible class to inmates in a prison, or tell a friend the good news of Jesus the Savior. Take flowers to residents in a nursing home. Visit a blind person and read the Bible to him or her. Write a letter to someone who needs encouragement. Say a prayer for all of them. Go to church services and sing hymns, pray, remember Christ in communion, and enjoy fellowship with other believers. Read your Bible every day. If you love the Lord your God and love your neighbor as yourself, through these types of deeds, Jesus assured us that we would know the divine origin of his teaching. We may never find satisfying answers to some complex issues, but there is ample certainty regarding humble elementary duties through which we can find fulfillment in an abundant Christian life. Scientist and God. We have a column each month in which we review one of the great scientists that has lived who was a fundamental believer in God. And our scientist for this month is Alan Sandage, who lived from 1926 to 2010. He's called the Grand Old Man of Cosmology by the New York Times. He was one of the most influential astronomers of the 20th century. He discovered the first quasar. He was a staff member of the Carnegie Institute and the Palomar Telescope. Alan Sandage said, quote, "The nature of God is not to be found within any part of findings of science. For that one must turn to Scripture. The more we learn about the universe and the physics that governs it, the more reasons we gain to believe in Christ as Creator and Lord. The world is too complicated in all its parts and interconnections to be due to chance. I am convinced that the existence of life with all its order and each of its organisms is simply too well put together. If there is no God, nothing makes sense. The atheist case is based on a deception they wish to play on themselves that follows readily from their initial premise. And if there is a God, he must be true to science and religion. If it seems not so, then one's hermeneutics, either the pastor's or the scientist, must be wrong." Cynthia's Corner by Cynthia Clayton. What makes humans special? When God created our world, he created the birds, fish, and animals and saw that it was good. Genesis 1:21 and 25. However, when God created man, he created man in his own image. Humans are the only creatures that God created in his image. This alone makes humans unique and special among the animal kingdom. Also, God gave to humans the responsibility of ruling over the other creatures he had made. Genesis 1:26 and 28. These two things, though, that God created humans to be special among all his creation. Biologically, Homo sapiens are part of the animal kingdom. But God set humans with the gift of his image within and a special responsibility without. What then does it mean to be created in God's image? It is certainly not a physical image or we would all look alike. Humans alone are created in God's spiritual image with an internal soul that lives after our physical body dies and gives us part of God's spiritual makeup. 1 Corinthians 15 talks about the resurrection of the dead. Our body is, quote, sown perishable. It is raised imperishable. It is sown a natural body. It is raised a spiritual body. End of quote, verses 42 through 44. God's spiritual image, his soul within us, reflects parts of God's divine nature, as referred to in Romans 1:20. Quote, "For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made." End of quote. What are these divine qualities that are clearly seen in what he has made? First and foremost, it's God's love. The Bible says God is love, 1 John 4:8. He created humans with the need to be loved and the capacity to give love, even sacrificial love, which God and Jesus showed us on the cross. God's other divine qualities, such as compassion, empathy, understanding, forgiveness, creativity, beauty, and diversity in design and function, are clearly seen in God's creation and his interactions with humankind. By creating us in his image, God has given these divine qualities to humans. Although because we are imperfect, we do not reflect them perfectly as God and Jesus do. But humans can appreciate and mimic God's beauty and diversity of design in his creation with our artistry and creativity. And we can reflect in our nobler selves God's sacrificial love, compassion, understanding, and forgiveness. Dandy Designs, Champion High Divers. The Northern Gannet is a seabird with incredible diving ability. This bird lives on a diet of fish, which it catches by plunging into the water at high speed. The Northern Gannet can see a fish underwater from 45 meters, that's almost 150 feet, above the water, although they can usually fly lower than that. When they see a fish, they dive into the water, making their body straight and rigid with their wings tucked back. They use their wings to guide their trajectory until just before reaching the water, when they tuck in their wings. With their head and neck stretched out, they pierce the water like an arrow at speeds up to 60 miles an hour. They dive very deep, swallowing their prey underwater. The Northern Gannets are designed for this high-speed diving. Their beaks are long and cone-shaped with no external nostrils. Their auditory canals are small and can be closed underwater. They have a long and strong sternum to protect their internal organs when they hit the water. Under their skin, they have several air sacs at strategic locations connected to their lungs. These help to cushion the impact with the water and supply oxygen while under the water. Their wings are long and narrow and located near the front of the body. The Northern Gannets usually nest on cliffs overlooking the ocean. They are monogamous, remaining in pairs for a lifetime of several seasons until one of them dies. These beautiful birds are well designed to be the champions of high-speed diving. We see this as another dandy design and an evidence of the work of a master designer. News and notes. Suicide data shows huge increase. The United States Center for Disease Control and Prevention released data from 1999 to 2014 showing a 24% growth in suicides in that 15-year period. The highest growth rate took place among girls from ages of 10 to 14, showing a 200% surge. Adolescent psychiatrist Victor Fornari attributes this to, quote, teens suffering from anxiety and depression, influenced by websites and blogs designed to dark topics and self-destructive coping mechanisms. End of quote. We would like to suggest that a lack of faith is a major contributor to this as well. The data from the week, May 13, 2016, page 20. Also, the National Center for Health Statistics has released data for suicide showing that for ages 75 and older, the rate has climbed 24% from 1999 to 2014. For men from 45 to 64, the rate has climbed 43%, and for women in that same age group, it has risen by 63%. Male suicides are far more common than female suicides overall. Those over 75 have 40 suicides per 100,000 for men and only 5 per 100,000 for women. We would suggest that not being involved in the work of the church is a major factor in these numbers. Younger males have half as many suicides as age 75 and up. Sitting around feeling useless and watching negative things on television is enough to discourage anyone. Seniors need to be involved. Get your senior group doing something at your congregation. The data is reported in the ARP Bulletin from June 2016, page 4. Marilyn Van Sass responds to why we exist. In her column in Parade magazine, May 29, 2016, page 10, the woman who is claimed to have the highest IQ and star proponent of Mensa made an interesting observation about religion. Quote, "What is the reason we are here? I think it depends on your spiritual beliefs. If you have a religion, it provides the answer. But if you don't believe in a God, the question contradicts your thinking. Having a reason implies having a purpose, which indicates an intelligent being for cognitive power, etc., with intent. That's what people call a God. So if you don't believe a God exists, you can't believe a reason exists. If you must settle for assuming we got here through some natural process, and that's that, end of quote. We would add that not knowing your purpose for existing leaves you unable to deal with pain and suffering in life. There could be a reason for the increase in suicide mentioned above. Teen birth rates drop. The Christian Scientist Monitor reports that teen births have fallen 61% since 1991. The percentage of teen females who were sexually active declined from 51% to 43% between 2006 and 2010. The authors of the study suggest that other causes of the drop in teen birth is access to reliable birth control. The data is from ChristianScienceMonitor.com. It's actually CSMMonitor.com. Teen abuse, a continuing issue. The NEA Today magazine, volume 19, number 4, page 16, has an interesting article written for teachers about abuse in romantic relationships among teenagers. It reports that 1 in 3 adolescents says they have experienced some form of abuse, physical, sexual, emotional, or verbal, in their romantic relationships. LoveIsRespect.org has a hotline, which 20,000 teens reached out to in 2015. We suggest that when God's plan for love, marriage, and sex are not followed, that control and ownership becomes a major theme of relationships. Teachers are locked into the values of our secular society and trying to deal with what goes on outside lockers in a typical high school hallway. The earth keeps growing. Every day, 60 tons of meteoritic dust falls to earth. In a billion years, that would be 2 trillion tons of material. You think that is something to worry about, just realize that the number would be about 1/300,000,000th of the earth's mass. So it's not as dangerous to our survival. It does, however, add useful trace elements to the earth. This may be another design feature of the earth we are just beginning to understand. The data is from Astronomy Magazine, 2016, page 19, also available at www.astronomy.com. Ancient Babylonians and high-level math. When you read the book of Daniel in the Bible, you see a great emphasis on education and intellectual skills. A recent discovery of a tablet dated to 325 BC contains inscriptions showing that the motion of Jupiter across the night sky was calculated using a system of precalculus. Dr. Matthew Ostendriver from Humboldt University in Berlin, who made the discovery, says the find is astounding. It uses a graphic technique of plotting velocity against time. Archaeologists know that Marduk was a patron god of the Babylonians, and that Jupiter was regarded as a celestial manifestation of Marduk. Their religious beliefs led them to an intense study of Jupiter. For Christians, the find simply highlights the conditions that Daniel found himself in during his time in Babylon. Reference for that was Dallas Morning News, January 29, page 2016, page 14a. Catholic priest abuse problems reflect ignorance of issue. The Pennsylvania Attorney General released a report in February of sexual abuse of children that revealed the diocese bishop created a payment chart to guide how much victims would receive from the church. The report listed fondling over clothes, $10,000, up to $25,000. Fondling under clothes, up to $40,000. Forced oral sex would pay up to $75,000. And forced sodomy or intercourse, up to $175,000. The idea that the sexual abuse of a child depends upon what is done to the child grossly oversimplifies the long-term effect of abuse. It suggests an incredible ignorance of how young minds are shaped or altered by highly personal experiences of any kind. The data came from the Associated Press released by Joe Mandake, February 29, 2016. Impact of pornography. Closely related to the abuse mentioned above is the growing evidence that men are especially influenced by viewing pornography. It affects their ability to function sexually in the future. One study showed that 83% of U.S. college men who viewed mainstream pornography were more likely to commit rape or sexual assault. Another set of studies showed that up to a third of men under 40 who were active in watching pornographic videos were dysfunctional in sexual relationships later in life. God never intended for the healthy, beautiful relationship between a husband and wife to be contaminated by pornography in the minds of either or both. Like a lot of things, when we don't do it God's way, we end up with major personal problems. A reference for that is The Week magazine, April 22, 2016, page 19. Scottish rejection of religion. Scotland has a long history of religious conflict. When we were there, we found people to be interested in God, but not in the church. A recently published government survey called, quote, Scottish Social Attitudes, end of quote, shows that 52% of Scottish adults say they have no religious affiliation. We would suggest the same rejection of religion exists in the United States. That doesn't mean these folks are atheists, but they are weary to the point of rejection of what is done by organized religion in the name of God. The article is in the South Bend Tribune, April 6, 2016, page 3b. Global warming data. One of the reasons there is skepticism about the reality of global warming is that local evidence seems to contradict it. In 2015, for example, an article had the most ice coverage it has had in 30 years. We have seen several articles referring to this fact as evidence that global warming is a scam. What people don't realize is that this is due to local wind shifts, snowfall, and changes in ocean currents. An example of this fact is that the Arctic Ocean lost ice 3 times faster than the Antarctic was gaining it. There is no question as to whether global warming is happening or not. It is. The real issue is whether this is caused entirely by humans and whether we can change it. Global warming has happened in the past. It even happened when there were no humans on this planet. We may be contributing to it, but we are not the sole cause. We can affect the rate at which it happens, and we need to prepare for its consequences. Making a political football out of it on one side or the other doesn't benefit anyone. The data for that is the Smithsonian Magazine, March 2016, page 112. PETA and animal selfies. People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, PETA, PETA, has sponsored numerous lawsuits, all based upon the assumption that animals and humans are equals, and that all animals should have the same rights as humans. In a recent case, a wildlife photographer named David Slater set up his camera near a group of black Maccabi monkeys on the island of Sulawesi in Indonesia, so the monkeys could trip the shutter and take pictures of themselves. Slater then took the pictures and used them in an article in the Daily Mail and in a book titled Wildlife Personalities. In September of 2015, PETA filed a suit for copyright infringement, saying the monkeys owned the pictures. The biblical concept of humans being responsible for ruling over God's creation, Genesis 1, 26-28, is at odds with denying human uniqueness. While PETA lost this suit because the President and Congress have not extended copyright laws to animals, that is probably in our future. References, Reader's Digest, May 2016, page 25-26. In a related story, it has been interesting to watch the case of the gorilla in the Cincinnati Zoo, who was shot because a 3-year-old child fell into the cage and was being handled by the ape. There has been general outcry against the zoo, but virtually no expression of concern for the well-being of the child. One wonders what the animal activists would want the zoo managers to do. Apparently, killing the child would be preferable to killing the gorilla, in their view. Driving deaths double in states legalizing marijuana. Washington State legalized the sale of marijuana in 2012. Data from 2014 shows that 17% of all fatal accidents in that year involved marijuana. It was involved in 8% of all fatal accidents before legalization. The study by the AAA Foundation for Traffic Safety, AAA, warns that THC, which is the main chemical in marijuana, affects everyone differently and is dangerous because of that. The data for that is on CNN.com. More flood tablet evidence. In 1872, a fragment of a tablet was found at Nineveh, which is in present-day Iraq, which contained a story almost identical to the biblical account of Noah. This was part of a 12-tablet epic of Gilgamesh. It had been part of the library of the Assyrian king Ashurbanipal, 668-627 BC, since that fragment was found. More than a dozen cuneiform tablets have been found which have been part of the flood account in them. The oldest of these tablets predates the earliest biblical manuscripts by 1,000 years. There is too much evidence to dismiss the flood as an Israelite myth. Data is from Archaeology Magazine, May-June 2016, page 31. renewed attention to oldest cave art. In 1994 in Chauvet, France, a group of charcoal and red pigment cave paintings was discovered. Similar paintings had been found in Lafou, and so it was assumed that the Chauvet paintings were of the same age. Recent sampling has shown that the Chauvet paintings are some 14,000 years earlier. That makes the paintings of lions in Chauvet the oldest known paintings. What is interesting is that the paintings are beautifully done and highly complex, and they have lasted in the cave for over 30,000 years. Chlorine isotope dating and carbon dating give the same results. The message is that from the earliest days on Earth, humans expressed themselves in artwork of high sophistication. There is really no such thing as primitive art. References Archaeology Magazine, July-August 2016, page 12. More genetic evidence for the oneness of the human race. The media confuses human history by tending to attach the word species to every new find that is made. In 2010, for example, fossils of early humans were found in a Denisova cave in Siberia. The media labeled them Denisovans and referred to them as a new species of humans. The scientific literature shows that the finds in Denisova are a racial branch from the Neanderthals and that modern humans contain DNA from both. The variations in genes can be complicated. A gene that can cause a problem in one population can benefit another. The classic example is the gene that causes sickle cell anemia. The gene is destructive, but provides immunity to malaria, which is a much bigger problem in some places in the world. Recent discoveries show that a gene which causes hypercoagulation leading to blood clots also accelerates wound healing, which is a huge issue in some populations. God made humans special, but he built into us the capacity to live in a wide variety of environments. Throughout time, that capacity has culminated in a wide range of races, Neanderthals being one, and Denisovans being another. The data is from Archaeology Magazine, July-August 2016, page 33. STDs surge. As our country continues its stampede towards promiscuity among all age groups, there are a number of consequences. Some of those are slower in appearing, but recent announcements by the Centers for Disease Control show that STD growth rates are going through the roof. In Indiana, syphilis rate has gone up 70% in a single year, rising from 297 cases in 2014 to 505 in 2015. The national average for syphilis rose 15% between 2013 and 2014. This is just one indicator. But experts say the data for chlamydia, gonorrhea, and HIV are expected to be comparable. The notion that passing out condoms or distributing literature about STDs is going to solve the disease problem is obviously unsupported. Changing the way people think about conducting themselves and how they express their sexuality is the only way to change the consequences of not living as God has called us to live. Reference for that is Associated Press article by Rick Callahan on June 2, 2016. GMOs and God's creation. There has been a lot of attention to what has been called genetically modified organisms, GMOs. Many of us have seen enough science fiction movies that we see a Frankenstein in every advancement made by science and biological issues. The fact is that humans have been modifying the genes of plants for years. Crossbreeding and hybridization are methods that have produced most of the vegetable material we eat. Sweet corn we enjoy is not the same as the corn grown by the Indians in the American Southwest before Europeans arrived. The National Academy of Sciences has reviewed over 900 studies of GMO crops and has found no difference in the results of eating those crops as compared to others. The bigger task for us is the chemicals used to kill bugs on plants or to preserve foods once they have been picked. God gave us the charge to subdue the earth and have dominion over all the earth in Genesis 1:26. Part of the fulfilling that command is using the materials God gave us, including the DNA of multiple plants and animals, to provide the food we need. We should pay attention to what is added to our foods, but blanket condemnation of science's efforts to feed a starving planet is unchristian and in defiance of God's commands. Reference article on that is in the week, June 3rd, 2016, page 3. And that's the end of the Does God Exist bi-monthly journal for September-October 2016. I hope you enjoy the beauty and the coolness of fall and that you have a really successful time. And in 60 days, we'll get back to you with the November-December issue of the Does God Exist magazine. Thank you for listening.